Dr. Alan Warburton, I'm a lecturer in the History Department at Lancaster.
Outbreak of War is being commemorated at the moment. It's the centenary. And I don't think there's a better place to start other than the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand. And the argument of, really, was it the trigger that started the war? Or was it an excuse? Or did it actually cause World War One?
Well, one of the interesting things about the anniversary is that there's been a huge outpouring of work. And there will be now for the next 4 or 5 years, I guess. Great controversies have already emerged about exactly that question. But the interesting thing is that it's been controversial for 40 years. So historians have never really settled on any particular view, mainly because they weigh evidence, each historian weighs the evidence differently. A recent book by Max Hastings, for example, reflected the Fisher thesis that you and I talked about some years ago. Late 60s, in English early 70s, German historian Fritz Fischer wrote a series of works looking at new material at that point, previously unseen material. And he said it was Germany what did it. So basically going back to 1919 and the war guilt clause of the Versailles Treaty and saying that it was Germany that prompted, anyway, the outbreak of war. That the assassination in Sarajevo of the Archduke was an opportunity, not a trigger. So a long, long-term debate about the origins of the war, which actually is still being fought out now, because other books have been published this year which say, no, that's not the case at all.
The alliance system is something that was crucial. There's no doubt about that, that kind of everybody slithered over the abyss was the phrase that you taught me.
Yeah.
Was everybody gearing up for war as early as the 1890s, perhaps, with the arms race, the naval race, or was it unexpected?
I don't think it was entirely unexpected. I think that one interesting element from more recent historical work is this sense that before 1914, Britain, France, Germany, to some extent Austria-Hungary and Russia, were industrialising, they were modernising, and that included their military, their armies as well. Not so much in the case of Britain, that concentrated on the navy, but certainly where France, Germany, Austria-Hungary and Russia were concerned. And it's certainly true that their armies were modernising and they were capable anyway of being expanded if necessary. One argument is that that was just about deterrence. That was actually to prevent war, if possible, to try to deter the other side from attacking. They all knew what each other's armies did because they went on regular summer manoeuvres and there were observers from all sides watching how these armies operated. So in 1914 they had some sense of what would happen. I mean, again, you come back to the Fisher theory. Fisher argued that Germany decided there would be war in 1914. It took the opportunity of the assassination in Sarajevo to go to war. Other people say that's not the case, that this was an accident. Perhaps some would argue it was Austria's fault rather than Germany's fault. So a variety of arguments about why the war began. It's certainly true that when the war began, apart from the British, pretty much everyone was prepared to immediately mobilise and to go to war. So they had vast schemes, which for the most part worked pretty well, even for Austria-Hungary and Russia, to gather up millions of men and to get them into boots and uniforms and go to the railway stations and march to the frontier. And they all worked pretty well, perhaps a little too well in some cases. And there were these great battles on the borders, on the frontiers, across Europe. The British were a bit different, as ever. because they didn't have conscription. All of the others had conscription, so they had vast numbers of men ready, good to go, as it were. Most of them trained to some extent, certainly mobilised, easily mobilised. Britain didn't have conscription and argued bitterly against conscription. It was the only country, major power in Europe, that didn't have conscription. It had a very small army, a very good army, I think, very professional army, but it was never intended to do very much, even in northern France. So when war breaks out on the 4th of August, the British army is mobilised immediately, a very small army. Much of it had fought in Egypt or in South Africa or India, so it was pretty experienced in those circumstances. But being a small army, it was intended to be put in a place that wasn't very dangerous on the Belgian border. The French didn't think much of it. They didn't want it to get in the way of what they wanted to do. The British were happy to go to the border. It just happened to be the most dangerous place to be on the Western Front in September, October 1914.
Britain declared war over Belgium, and a lot of listeners have come to me and gone, Belgium. Why did Britain go to war over Belgium? Mm. It was historic reasons, really, that led them to declare war and to get involved in a conflict they weren't involved in.
I think that's right. I think that, I mean, one of the interesting arguments about why war broke out is that there had been many crises. Europe is prone to crisis, as we've seen more recently as well. There had been crises in 1905, 1909, 1911, 1912, 1913, they'd all been resolved partly through diplomacy. So British intervention at a diplomatic level had produced conferences and meetings, and these crises had been resolved to some extent anyway. In 1914, Germany specifically rejected that option. It rejected diplomacy, didn't want a conference, and that was always a kind of contributory factor in how people saw German actions. The soldiers marching through northern France in August 1914 really were there, I think, largely because of the German invasion of Belgium. And it seemed that issue seems to have been the key issue that swung the British government into declaring war in 1914. You probably know that the Liberal government at the time was deeply opposed, for the most part, to any continental intervention. It was deeply opposed to being part of a major war. There were people that threatened to resign, and some did. But for those who were wavering about whether Britain should be involved, I think it was the invasion of Belgium. And I think the answer is geography. It's the same kind of problem that had led Britain, the British Army, Wellington's forces, to fight at Waterloo in 1815. The argument was that possession of Belgium and Holland, but especially Belgium, by any continental power, whether it was Germany or France, would immediately threaten the English Channel. So it's a key geographical element. A major power in Belgium and Holland would threaten the English Channel, would threaten the southern English ports, and would be a major problem elsewhere in the North Sea as well. It would certainly perhaps have led to the defeat of France, which of course is what the German army intended to do when it marched into Belgium, and that would have been a problem as well, because Britain might well have been isolated at that point, no ally on the continent of Europe. And I think as well there's a kind of legal, the Liberal government of the time put great stress upon international treaties, on international law, and the German invasion of Belgium broke several of those treaties. So I think there was a complicated reason, but I think certainly the invasion of Belgium was the key.
So Britain was dragged into war, and you said it was a bank holiday weekend that war was declared. What was the reaction to war?
It was a beautiful weekend. The British, of course, take great pleasure in their bank holidays. Then as now, the seaside resorts were packed. Morecambe was packed, Blackpool. And I think, to be honest, I don't think too many people took the crisis in between Austria and Serbia too seriously until very late on in the day, probably the end of July, maybe even 1st, 2nd of August, very, very late in the day before it sort of hit the public's attention, because they were on holiday. Why would you bother what's happening in a place that you can't even find on the map? When you can go to Morecambe Beach and have an ice cream, which I do from time to time. Certainly in the big cities, there may have been enthusiasm. Again, there's a debate about this. Journalists tend to be in cities, for the most part. Cities tend to attract large crowds about almost anything. So Burnley won the FA Cup in 1914, and there were great crowds attracted to Burnley's homecoming, for example. So I think certainly when war was declared, with the outbreak of war, there were large crowds that gathered famously around Buckingham Palace, for example, to hear the declaration of war. There's some evidence that in more rural areas there was much less enthusiasm, if any. And I think the reason for that is fairly clear, because it's harvest time. It's round about harvest time. People in country areas have got more sensible things to do on their hands than gather and shout about the war. There was some disquiet as well, because from 1911 onwards, the British had made a list of all the horses in the country, all the usable military, all the horses that might have been used for military purposes. So there was a long list of them. And, for example, in Morecambe, people woke up to, all the horse-drawn trams had lost their horses more or less overnight. They'd all been taken by the army. Various farms had lost their horses. Of course, horses were a very big deal in the economy of 1914. Some brewery wagons were allowed to keep their horses, brewery firms, because... Of course, until Lloyd George got his hands on the beer later in the war, beer was important, quite rightly so too. There were significant kind of moments. Lynn MacDonald, in one of her books, talks about the poignant sight of all the islanders gathering at the main port in the Isle of Arran on the west coast of Scotland as the army came and took all their horses during harvest time. Took all their horses, took them on the boats, and took them off to war. And some of that, of course, has been reflected in War Horse.
The first couple of months of the war, there was an incredible amount of loss straight away in that summer, particularly the King's Own Regiment up the road. That was hit particularly heavy. Why was, those opening months so stark? Was it because the mobility of war was different, because we hadn't dug in yet?
I think it was mainly because the British Army found itself in exactly the wrong position, not once but twice in 1914. Roughly about 90,000 men were deployed to northern France, and they arrived there quite quickly, actually, much sooner than either the French or the Germans had anticipated. They marched to the Belgian frontier and they dug in at Mons. Famous moment. They found themselves in exactly the wrong position, because some 90,000 British soldiers, not all in one place, incidentally, found themselves facing some 600,000 German soldiers marching straight at them. In other words, they were marching round the French lines, hadn't anticipated that the British would be in the way, and neither had the British anticipated that. And famously, the Battle of Mons, of course, was a fierce encounter battle, as they say, and the British were forced to withdraw fairly quickly, just simply overwhelmed by huge numbers of German soldiers coming at them. And they steadily retreated for the next few weeks. No armies are taught to retreat, so this was a very demanding process. And we were very badly damaged in the retreat. So were the French, of course, as well, pushed back by, again, huge numbers of German soldiers. By early September, there was one last-ditch battle to try and stop the German invasion, which is sometimes known as the Miracle of the Marne, when what was left of the French and British armies turned round and fought the Germans. Initially to a standstill and then push the Germans back, and by mid-September the first trench lines are being dug as the Germans are too exhausted to retreat anymore and the British and French are too exhausted to advance anymore, so they begin to settle in those areas intending to finish it in 1915 when they've recovered. The British moved out of the danger area into what they thought might be a safer area around the Flemish town of Ypres, the Belgian town of Ypres, and now known as Ypres, which turned out to be in exactly the wrong place for the second time, because the Germans wanted then to make a breakthrough to the Channel, the race to the sea, as it came to be known. And fierce fighting took place in and around Ypres in October or November 1914. The town was held, the Germans were stopped. They dug in again, which would prove to be a real problem later in the war. But by that time, the British, in the fighting from August to end of November 1914, had suffered some 90,000 casualties. So virtually all of the initial force had suffered, had been killed, wounded, missing prisoner.
And that's when I think we started to realise, as the infamous phrase says, it wasn't going to be over by Christmas.
And that's the big moment. That's the big moment. Yeah. The war would now be very different. And in Britain's case, they would have to face some very serious problems. So, for example, they didn't have conscription. They wouldn't have it. It had been talked about since the Boer War. They absolutely refused to have a conscription in Britain. Well, okay, if they stick to that position after 1914, after the end of 1914, and the circumstances on the Western Front, Britain will lose the war. It's a simple equation. If you don't want conscription, you will lose the war. Actually, it was January 1916, even then, before the first Conscription Act was brought in.
And that's when campaigns like Kitchener's famous campaign, Your Country Needs You, started to come in.
Tried to get a great wave of volunteers, and it was very successful. Some 2.5 million men volunteered in Britain alone by the end of 1915. The Canadians, bless them, they've sent over they had no army really in August 1914, but they had gathered together volunteers, and they were in training camps in Wales and Salisbury Plain, God help them, in January and February 1915. There were volunteers beginning to emerge in South Africa, Australia, New Zealand. But in 1915, half of the British Army, as it was always known on the Western Front, was actually the Indian Army. The soldiers from the Indian Army had been brought over to fight on the Western Front. They had a terrible, terrible experience because it was circumstances and conditions that they'd never experienced before. Britain was in a pretty desperate situation. It had effectively lost one of the best professional armies that it had ever had in, four months of fighting.
Was it ever going to be over by Christmas, or, you know, was it going to be a long war, and did they know it was going to be a long war?
I think that's a fascinating question. I think over the years it's come to be slightly misunderstood in some ways. Obviously, as I said before, the war wasn't over by Christmas. So the slogan, the phrase, seemed to be a bit naive, a sense that no one had sort of taken the war terribly seriously in that sense. I have a slightly different view. I think that many people had thought about the war before 1914, about some kind of war before 1914. I think certainly in the case of France, Germany, Austria-Hungary and Russia, I think they had prepared to try to deter war, if at all possible. But sometimes deterrence fails. And I think they had planned to then fight, if you like, an all-out war. Really a very intensive war on the frontiers. And that's exactly what happened. Huge battles were fought. They caused huge casualties. The French and German armies lost very significant numbers of soldiers. By the end of 1914, Austria-Hungary and Russia lost twice as many by the end of 1914. So the great battles that they had planned for had developed, and they hadn't been decisive. So I think that what they intended was to fight huge battles to guarantee that it would be over quickly. And in fact, those huge battles had the opposite effect of guaranteeing that it would be a more prolonged conflict.